When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
So, a little bit of an audible being called here, friends over at the Chair Shot Radio Network. This is your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd. And you thought you were going to be listening to the Four Corners podcast today. Oh, no. No, no. It's not happening. Let me tell you, story time with your Uncle Patrick, noble listener. Have a seat, children, by the fire. In the year of '02, no, just kidding, it was 25. There was a podcast that was intended to be recorded with Patrick O'Dowd and PC Tunney, and we were gonna take a look at the Sweet 16. Here's the condensed version of that podcast. Patrick and Tunney, round one, 32 possible correct answers. Patrick and Tunney both got 27 of the 32 teams that advanced from the first round to the second round. Patrick doesn't recall what Tunney had, but Patrick got 12 of the Sweet 16 teams correct. Only one of his elite eight teams is out of the tournament, that being St. John's. Fuck you, Patino. You laid an egg. I believed in you, and you shit the bed. Florida, I'm looking at you. You cut it close, you bastards. You had me sweating. And the other part of this podcast that we're unfortunately, PC Tunney is under the weather. He's not feeling well. Would have had me changing my national championship winner from the Florida Gators to the Duke Blue Devils, who look like the far and away best team in the tournament. And it's not even close. Instead of that, something that tends to happen amongst the chair shot brethren. There are multiple. Dave, how many separate threads do we have for the various podcasting categories at this point? We've got the chair shot wrestling thread that's just like chair shot radio. Yeah, we've got chair shot sports.
Then there's the ones that we don't even bother you with because it's like Patrick won't give a shit about us. But let me see how many.
Then there's the bandwagon nerds thread.
See how many I actually have active right now. Three. I have 11 active right now. Involving
11
various
11
people.
Active threads, and one of those people is our good friend DJ over at the Mindless Wrestling Pod, who I hear that's a good podcast. Is it a good podcast?
I like
they tell me it's decent. Positive. I don't know.
I mean, and as long as the three DJ of remembers us have, to hit the record button, that really helps,
or even bother to show up. I've missed two episodes in the last 6 weeks,
also shameful. So I'm sitting here chatting with Dave. I've already got Dave lined up for doing chair shot or bandwagon nerds, Four Corners podcast. We got so many podcasts, everybody. I don't even know which one I'm doing right now, but I'm talking to Dave about Four Corners podcast. And I see this tweet and I'm reading it and I'm like, you know, I have a thread with our good friend DJ and Dave where we generally just talk about Lord of the Nerd shit. And I post memes that I know they'll find funny, but maybe nobody else will, like the fact that 10 years ago, Back to the Future Part 2 was in the future, and now it's in the past. But yeah, we're not in the future, we're in the past, but the future is still happening in the past of a past future that's future to be coming in the past someday. We've hit ludicrous speed. I've gone cross-eyed.
I'm just going to like the Hulk from Endgame.
Right. So
it's all bullshit or none of it.
Right. But I come across this tweet, and it's from a guy whose handle is at JBabyEars. You're not verified, so good for you for not giving Elon your ex money. And this tweet is an evergreen tweet. I see it all the time. And the tweet was simply, a lot of people say it's nostalgia bias, and in some respects, yes. But to act like we didn't see a regression in music quality is blasphemous. So I share this tweet with Dave and DJ in our little thread, because the other thing that we do talk a lot is we talk a lot of music. And that spawned, let's see, I sent that at 2:15 on Tuesday afternoon. We talked about this tweet for about the length of a podcast in this Twitter thread.
Mind you, we're all at work during this time, 40, so we're very productive we're at today. Work.
It makes you wonder
I was
doing
actually
at the
fairly
office.
Productive. So I finally was like, DJ, what are you doing at 7:30 tonight? Dave and I are supposed to be recording Four Corners. And Dave's like, I thought we were talking sports. And I was like, well, I'm calling an audible. And so welcome everyone to a very special episode of Musical Chairs. And not the musical chairs you're used to. We are going to talk about this tweet and replicate some of the discussion, though I've had some other thoughts about it. I hope you guys have had time to think about it a little bit as well, because I want to go in a couple of different directions than just rehashing what we talked about, because we definitely, and we do need to talk about this idea of, is music regressing? And whether or not that is true or not. And I actually almost messaged a couple of friends. I have a friend in the Chicagoland area who we've had on Bandwagon Nerds a few years back. He's a music journalist. Like, he goes to concerts. He interviews. We were talking about Queen before you jumped on the call. He's interviewed Brian May. Like, he's interviewed all kinds of famous artists. And not so famous artists and everything in between. And he's written for, he writes for Esquire. It was one of the publications he's written for, but he's a very active music journalist. And another friend of his, that I went to college with, I went to school with both these guys. I figured they would have wonderful takes. I just didn't have time to ask them if they'd be willing to jump on a podcast. But I wanted to, I just felt like this was a fun topic and just an interesting diversion from what we usually hear on the Chair Shot Radio Network. So before we get into it, welcome everyone into this very special edition of Musical Chairs here on the Chair Shot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and invest in your Chair Shot swag. $19.99 for a shirt. Spend a few dollars more, though, and you can get it in soft style. Your giblets will thank you. I am joined, like I said, by DJ from the Mindless Wrestling Pod and my good friend, the lawyer himself, fellow Musical Chairs co-host David Ungar. And before we get started diving into the question of whether music has faced a regression, let's start with background. Let's start with our backgrounds, because I think it's very important for this discussion that we start by just kind of establishing where are our tastes in music lie, where our wheelhouse lies, and really that I think is very important in informing the rest of the discussion. So Dave, we're going to start with the familiar, because we've both done this show. We've talked about our own musical tastes for a while. I'm going to start with you. Your foundation of music, what is your bedrock?
I would say, as you're well aware, 80s, 90s music, mostly leaning into heavy metal, hard rock, alternative rock, that sort of thing. I've never been big on hip hop, rap, that sort of thing. There are acts I greatly like, Snoop Dogg, you know, stuff like that. But I've always been, you know, Metallica, Rush, Green Day is my favorite band, and they're, of course, you know, qualifies the 90s, that sort of thing. So that's kind of where I have always gravitated towards, is the heavier stuff, maybe a little bit like the faster, thrashy sort of things. Obviously, I grew up in the 80s, so it's hair metal and all that kind of stuff. I was real big into that, you know, a lot of it because I looked like them. I know you would never know it now with my receding hairline and all that, but in 87, I had flowing locks, you know, so yeah, that's kind of where I came from, you know, grow up on the East Coast, and that had a big influence on, you know, who I was and my musical taste growing up.
Sure. And for me, it was, I actually really love, my musical. I feel like I'm very eclectic. And I don't know if you would agree or disagree with that, Dave, but like between, go ahead.
No, I mean, when we were doing Musical Chairs, the old format before, fuck you, Spotify came along and screwed the whole thing up. Yeah. I mean, that was what we would be doing, is I would pick a band, you'd pick a band, and it would typically, mine was kind of fitting in a certain notch, right? Or even a niche, for lack of a better term. And you were kind of all over the place with stuff. And I appreciated that about you, because I'd learned, hey, there's more to the Bee Gees than Saturday Night Fever. Okay, I didn't realize that this stuff's out there, you know?
Holiday is, God, you wouldn't know it was a Bee Gees song if I didn't tell you. But anyway, I attribute most of my start in love of music in my parents, my mother and my father. And you couldn't find two more different people when it came to the type of music that they liked and owned. Like, my mom was the Bee Gees fan. My mom was Helen Reddy, because, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. Like, my parents were children they were born in the 50s and were teenagers in the 70s. Like, that was her thing. So, you know, my mom had that. My mom loved old musicals, like Rodgers and Hammerstein sort of stuff, Fred Astaire, Bing Crosby. And then later on was the one, like, Grease. Like, she was the Grease fan. And then there was my dad. And my dad was very much kind of in the vein of what you described. Like, my dad's the reason I know anything about Queen other than Wayne's World, because my dad had their 70s discography on vinyl. Like, and I was like, oh, this song's really cool. My dad's like, that's nothing. Here's all these. And then I had a turntable and I listened to them. My dad loved REO Speedwagon. And then, as you know, that was like, that was one of his bands. He loved him so much, but he also loved Jimmy Buffett and was big into them. And through them, you know, as I started to find my own taste in music, and, you know, my first band that I fell in love with was Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer, that video of them on the high wires flying around. It was magic. And I also took, I played the trumpet. I was an orchestral band kid. I was a jazz band kid. I did choir. I did musicals. And so, like, I love musical theater. I took my kid to see Hamilton not too long ago. You know, and then through the other thing that I always really like is learning about other people's music and music they love. And because of Greg DeMarco, like, I didn't really know the Beastie Boys very well until I met Greg DeMarco. I was never really listened to the Beastie Boys other than Fight for Your Right. And then Greg introduced me to the rest of, you know, introduced me to Paul's Boutique. You know, I loved Rush. I loved Styx, Metallica, obviously. And then, of course, then grunge hits and you get, you know, Pearl. I was always a Pearl Jam over Nirvana guy. I know that's kind of blasphemous. And then one of my best buddies in college, a guy named Chris Willie, he introduced me to Tool. And my wife loves alternative. And that's just, I've always been interested in embracing music. And when people say they love an artist, I go and I check them out. That's how Taylor Swift ends up on musical chairs. Because I also think the great thing about music is exploring it. And currently, I just listened to a band called Sleep Token. Don't know if you know Sleep Token, but you should check them out. They're a good band. Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars is my boy, and I think is one of the best musicians going out there with his blend of modern R&B and classic 70s R&B. So great. All right, DJ, your foundation.
Boy, my story is probably a mix of you and Dave, because, again, I came from kind of an eclectic background. My dad being from Kentucky, I listened to a lot of country music, a lot of bluegrass. He did like his rock and his southern rock. Like, dad was kind of into the more, I guess, for lack of a better term, in his world, heavy stuff like Uriah Heep, Santana, stuff like that. But I was also listening to the Outlaws, Molly Hatchet, Bob Seger. My mom, on the other hand, she liked more, like, she introduced me to Jimmy Buffett. She introduced me to Fleetwood Mac and REO Speedwagon and things like that. And then I went through my own little phase of being strictly 80s pop from, like, 81 to about 85, 86. Like, I listened to Michael Jackson, Cyndi Lauper, Madonna, Depeche Mode, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, all that stuff. That was my bag. And then around 86, 87, I started really listening to Twisted Sister. And that kind of grabbed me into the hairband metal. And then Appetite for Destruction came out in late 87, 88. And I was off to the races with hard rock. And then everything just kind of evolved from there into the 80s hairband scene. And then into Metallica and everything came after that. I went into the grunge era kicking and screaming. Like, I can appreciate the Pillars, you know, the Pearl Jams, the Nirvanas, the Alice in Chains. I can appreciate those guys, but they just spawned a whole bunch of music that I really didn't care for. But I think about my tastes, and while my foundation is definitely hard rock and heavy metal, I can just as equally listen to the Gin Blossoms. I used to like Toad the Wet Sprocket back in the day, and I liked, what was his kid's name?
I saw Toad the Wet Sprocket last year.
Did you? Okay.
In the 90s, there was this, the pop music of the 90s. I'm a big Bare Naked Ladies fan. The Bare Naked Ladies, to this day, one, still cranking out new music. Two, by the way, gentlemen, you should all listen to one of their latest songs. It's called Way Too Old. And it's just about how they're too old for this shit. It's a great song. You'll feel it right here. And you'll just be like, yep. But their tours now consist of nostalgia. They're nostalgia runs, right? So, like, I saw them with Toad the Wet Sprocket and the Gin Blossom. And they were the headliners. And this year they're touring with, Sugar Ray?
Sugar Ray's still a thing?
Yeah, and Sugar Ray's coming back doing a little reunion. I don't know if they're, I'll have to look it up, but they're doing a great tour. So I'm right there with you. Real quick, before we get into the meat of this, one band you like that people wouldn't expect that you like, that you haven't already.
God. Well, I'd have to think about that a minute. Dave, are you asking both of us?
Yes. Dave, you can go
Dave,
first.
Dave, if you can think of it off the top of your head, go first.
A band that I like that people wouldn't expect.
Expect you to like.
Daughtry. There you go.
Okay.
Chris Daughtry's nice. Band. Daughtry. I love his voice. And actually, I'll say it's a twofer. Kelly Clarkson as well. I mean, when she did Since You've Been, what is it? Since You've Been Gone? That song is a banger, actually. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, even that one guy on YouTube always does the videos about why is this song great, Rick Beato or something like that. He actually did one for Kelly Clarkson. So if he's saying it's a great song, I'm going to be like, oh, okay, there must be something here. So I think those are two that you wouldn't expect, that wouldn't kind of fall into that ilk of what I typically like.
So this won't surprise Dave, because I talked about him on the show, but John Denver. I love John Denver so much, and he's so much more than Take Me Home, Country Roads. Poems, Prayers, and Promises is one of the most beautiful tunes ever. And as I've gotten older, I've found that I gravitates a little bit to introspective, like looking back on life songs. And that's what Poems, Prayers, and Promises is. Such a good song.
Since you mentioned John Denver, I'm just going to throw in Barry Manilow was the first concert I ever went to was Barry Manilow.
You talk about, I cried when I saw Neil Diamond, because Neil Diamond is one of my gods.
Yeah.
And I was crushed when Parkinson's has impacted him so much that he can't tour anymore. Like, it sucks. He's still with us. Keep fighting, Neil. DJ, one band that people would be surprised that you like.
I can give you two. James Taylor. I'm a huge James Taylor fan.
Very nice.
And believe it or not, this had my dad looking at me a certain way when I was a certain age. I loved Debbie Gibson. Debut album. Looking at me. Huh?
That shit slaps.
It does.
That was a whole genre.
Yeah.
And that's actually the perfect segue to this conversation and where it started, because I maintain that music has not regressed the way people say it has. That what happens, I think a lot of people, I'm going to do the Saturday Night Live comparison. There's a point where everybody seems to watch Saturday Night Live growing up, and then you hit a point where it doesn't connect the way it used to. And so it might be fine. You might like an episode here or there, but we find ourselves being like, well, this cast of Saturday Night Live, that was the greatest cast ever, and it'll never get better than that. And I posit, and my argument is that people are very much like that when it comes to music, because I think generationally, I can't tell you how many people older than me are like, well, that crap from the 80s, that was just a bunch of shit. You know, you got to listen to fucking Foghat and that's it. And that was the best, you know, it'll never get better than that, and Credence. And I'm not making fun of either of those bands. They're terrific bands. But I think that we get stuck as consumers because we find the thing that we like. And it has meaning for us too. Like, how old were you, Dave? Like I discovered Bon Jovi when I was 10 years old. You know, and Nirvana hit it big in 92. I was 14. Like, that's when we're developing. And that becomes our formative years. And that's why, to me, like I compare Nirvana to the fucking Beatles, or talk about Nirvana the way like my parents talk about the Beatles, because like that's where we were. And I think for me, I don't think music has regressed. I think music has changed. I think how music is made has definitely changed. I think you can agree with that. And it's hard to know whether or not music has really regressed because we're in it, right? You know, I bring up Taylor Swift. I argue that Taylor Swift is this generation's Michael Jackson, this generation's Beatles, and you can't escape her the way that you couldn't escape them. And I think that her music will be as iconic as theirs is now when we're away from her as where she is now, because we don't have the benefit of time yet. So that's my theory. I will turn it over to the panel to respond. Go ahead, you can't both gesture at each other. Okay, DJ, go.
Okay, well then I'll take it over. You know, I've had some time to think about it, and the way you posed it, Patrick, is accurate. We're old men now. And, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit appealed to 14-year-old you, 19-year-old me. So, yeah, it's different. But then I'm also looking at it from the other angle. I look at the stuff that I listened to from like 87 to 91, a lot of hair band stuff and a lot of bad hair band stuff. I'm not talking like, you know, just Motley Crue, Poison. Striper. I'm talking like Striper, Britney Fox, Enough's Enough, a band called
Sir,
Tough,
don't you blaspheme
Ugly
Striper.
Kid, Rat, Ugly Kid
can
Joe, like
can I blaspheme Rat?
No, I see. I like Rat. You're not allowed to blaspheme Rat. Like Rat. But objectively, I look back at some of that stuff now, and it was horrible. Like it was terrible fucking music. But I loved it then. So to me, that argument only holds so much water if I can objectively look back. It's because that stuff really ushered out the hair band era, like, and this is what allowed Nirvana to come in and be such an explosion, because there were so many copycat bands that all sounded like the same cookie cutter nonsense of everybody was sometimes.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, uncertainty, self-doubt, stressing about not knowing where to start. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Type of cookie cutter of Motley Crue, and bad versions of it at that. So when we move forward through the decades and you look at music, I think each generation goes through that little lull. And I think we're going through that right now with hard rock and heavy metal. And I talked to you guys a little bit about that. Every band... Right. is starting to sound the same, and they're all emulating the worst parts of Pantera. Now, I love Pantera, but like the stuff that was really, really good is fucking awesome. And the stuff that was not so good really wasn't very good. And I think generationally we go through that. So I don't know if it's necessarily a matter of perception versus reality.
See, from my standpoint, it's tough because like, I think when I look at music nowadays, I don't listen to the radio anymore because there's nothing that really appeals to me on the radio that says, oh, I got to check this out, that sort of thing. But I mean, and that's not to take anything away from Taylor Swift or any of the really big acts that are out there, Olivia Rodrigo or stuff, you know, they're doing their things. But to me, it's always more the performance is the big thing more so than the talent. And that's not to say Taylor Swift doesn't have talent, because she does. She's got a hell of a voice. She's, you know, an excellent songwriter, that sort of thing. But when I go in, and that's why I'm glad, Pat, that you started this whole thing off, like where you come from and that sort of thing. When I look at my background and the music that I was into when I was young, you know, starting off with bands like Kiss and then all the 80s hair metal bands, which I would pose out to you, DJ, a lot of those bands are very horribly underrated. Like lots of talent that just got lost because of the look, you know. Poison is one of those bands that I thought was immensely more talented than they ever got credit for.
They're still rocking out there today. I mean, Poison's still putting on a hell of a show.
I mean, look, the words to Every Rose Has Its Thorn got Bill and Ted into heaven, for Christ's sake. I mean, that's got to count for something, right? But
yes. Go ahead. Go ahead and finish your thought. Then I'll counter suit.
But
everything is bandwagon nerds around
that's
here.
That's right. I think I talked about it earlier in the chat. To me, it's the musicianship, and I'm not seeing anything like really groundbreaking with respect to instruments right now. I don't see a lot happening with the guitar that's groundbreaking. Like we discussed earlier, maybe there's not much more you can really ferret out of the guitar that hasn't already been done. You know, you can only do so many harmonics and, you know, pick slides and tapping and all that kind of stuff. And I played guitar for years, so I know what it can and can't do, that sort of thing. But, I don't see those kind of bands anymore. Bands that you're like looking at saying, wow, that's a really tremendous composition of a song. You know, Tool's about the closest thing you can get. Pat, you mentioned Tool. They're still out there rocking it. You know, of course, they don't come out with an album, but yeah, once every 10 years. But
well, and they just pissed off an entire continent. So I don't know if you guys saw that story. Well,
they're prone to do that. They're prone to do that.
Well, but
see that story.
So apparently they were doing some like festival that they like put on themselves and like it was in like Brazil, but they like played the exact same set list for the same crowd for like their 2-day tickets that these people paid. Like it was a bad look. Were getting the lyrics to their own music wrong.
That's an excellent lyric.
So there's a couple of things to this. One, if you are looking for a podcast to listen to outside of Bandwagon Nerds, and I know it's outside of the Chairshot Radio Network, and I know it's blasphemous to talk outside the network. Sorry, Lord Tunney and Lord.
I do it all the time.
I apologize to Greg personally.
So, and if you want to get a taste of it, check out. There's a series. It was a very short series. It only made it about 4 episodes before it got canceled. It's called Song Exploder. And Song Exploder is a podcast series that literally explores, and this guy's done 289 episodes, and he brings in musicians and he talks to them about their process, and he introduces me not only to musicians I already know, like you will see familiar names, you will also see new names, and you will see what people are doing with music and like, just to give you an idea of how eclectic this podcast is, the last episode dropped March 5th. It is an interview with Theodore Shapiro in his process developing the main title theme sequence to the television show Severin. So Dave already knows how I feel about that particular episode. DJ, it's the best science fiction series in the last 10 years. And that's not me being hyperbolic. It's a show you should watch. And you'll have plenty of time before season 3, because it took 3 years to get a season 2. The other thing that I think is really important to pay attention, there are a lot of great musicians out there doing great things with music that we've never seen or heard before. And you know, Dave, you just mentioned it. We don't really, and I don't know, DJ, about you, but I also don't think we're necessarily the audience that checks out and sees what people are listening to or what is new or current. In whether it's our own genre or all genre. Like, I only started to appreciate Dua Lipa, for example. I only like Dua Lipa because I learned about her on Song Exploder and learned about the process of what it took to make and mix and what she does. And that's the other thing is musicianship now isn't necessarily how you play an instrument. Musicianship is very much about how you are developing and using and mixing sound and creating sound and environments. It's fascinating to me, and it's not my thing. It's fascinating to me that like DJs, like literal DJs, not DJ the podcaster, sell out concerts, like sell out arenas because of the way that they mix music. Like that's a concept that I think to me and to people of our generation, we'll just say that so that we don't have to say numbers next to our names. Dave is 75, but
that's right.
What appealed to us and what was music to us, like that's not how music's necessarily being made now. And frankly, like we don't know where the next genius is going to come from. I would argue Daft Punk was amongst the geniuses of their time. They were amazing and they kept going forever. I think Bruno Mars is, you know, he's a Nepo baby, but or a Nepo baby, but he is 1000% a tremendous musician. Justin Timberlake is a fucking tremendous musician. I'm sad that Christina Aguilera sells beauty care products because she was a tremendous musician.
Oh, I love Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, don't get that face. Don't do that. She does. Actually, it's not just she doesn't sell beauty products. She sells like sex lotions and shit. Like yeah, I know, right? No, I looked it up. I was like, what is Christina Aguilera? Let me see if
I can find have her attention now here, Patrick.
Yeah. I'll look that product up.
Lube by Aguilera. But
my point is, and the other thing that I want to point out, because you were like, I remember at one point there was this explosion of guitarists in the 70s, right? Like Jimmy Page, Eric Clapton, Jimi Hendrix, R.I.P. You know, I would put Brian May in there because the man literally invented a sound that is uniquely him. You know, you had all of these great guitarists that sort of propelled it into a place, and really not since. What maybe Jack White would arguably be the last like sort of known commodity, what people would argue was a genius guitarist out there. And it's debatable. If you don't like Jack White, that's fine. But you never know. And you can't predict when genius is going to arrive. And we don't know, like the thing that is amazing about human beings and about us as creatures is that we really are unexpected and we're always, we're fluid. And so who knows when the next genius is going to come about and what it's going to look like. Some would argue Lady Gaga is a genius right now as a musician. And whether you like her music or not, there's an argument there. Now, will she stay in the annals of time? I think she will, because she still is. And she hit the scene 20 years ago. And then she, you know, she pops something out and is back. And she took a break and all those things. So I think that we don't necessarily see something that may be genius now as genius because it doesn't fit the mold of what we found to be genius, if that makes sense.
Do you think, go ahead,
it does? Yeah, it does, because you think about, and I think of two pivotal moments in rock history, AC/DC Back in Black and Guns N' Roses Appetite for Destruction. Like, we knew they were good albums. Did we know when those albums dropped that they would be as timeless and influential as they ended up being? You couldn't have told me in 1988 that Appetite for Destruction would be one of the biggest albums ever released by a band ever. I enjoyed it, but to know that that would be what it ended up being, I don't think anybody would have predicted that then.
Yeah, I was going to pose this to you guys. Is it kind of like a cause and effect of like creativity? And what I mean by that is, like, when you look at the big surges that took place in like where you can identify and say, okay, music really took a leap forward, you can easily go to the 60s, right, and see, you know, Beatles, bands like the Doors, Hendrix came along a little bit later, you got the Stones going on, all that stuff. And this isn't to like try and glamorize drug use. All right. I'm not trying to do that, but there is something to be said for the fact that a lot of people were using mind expanding drugs, smoking weed, doing acid, getting in all that. And it really, whatever you want to say about it, whether you agree with it or not, it did expand people's creativity explosively. And there is something, and that is not, look, I mean, you know, weed's legal and kids are doing all sorts of weird shit nowadays. They're not, I don't see a lot of them out there on acid getting creative, mind expanding, that sort of stuff. So I don't know. I mean, maybe that had something to do with it. You look at those eras and the creativity that was going in, lyricism for sure. You don't see lyricism today like you do, you know, Rush, Zeppelin, those kind of bands. So I'm not trying to throw that out there and say, well, that's what it is, but maybe there's something to that.
Also, by the way, Christina Aguilera currently performing in Vegas with her in a residency and working on a new album and filming a documentary.
Okay.
So she has stepped away from the other business that I was talking about.
Okay.
I'm still trying to find it. I swear to God I found this not too long ago because I looked it up.
Dave, you brought up an interesting point that Patrick and I were actually talking about in, I guess you could call it, the kickoff show before you showed up. We were talking about Queen, and he was talking about the song Under Pressure with David Bowie. And I'm going to give Patrick credit here because this was a nugget I did not know, that David Bowie and Freddie Mercury were high as kites singing that song. And in Patrick's explanation, they were both vocally trying to outdo one another. And Freddie Mercury hits a high note that he probably never hit again in his life. Why? Because he was so blasted out of his mind. He's like, you know what? Let's just push myself creatively as far as I think I can go, because right now I'm so zonked, I don't know any better. And you got to wonder how much of that is true. I mean, there's actually a logical, there's a straight line that can be drawn there in some cases.
I mean, it's a slippery slope sort of argument, right? But there's a lot of truth to
it.
There's no question that that kind of stuff expanded creativity. You know, maybe you got guys like, you know, Hendrix looking at the guitar a little bit differently. I mean, a lot of that, of course, is, you know, you're going from the era of like, you know, Chuck Berry, who was revolutionary on the guitar. And then you take that Chuck Berry, Jimi Hendrix, you got this progression of stuff. And I mean, I'm just talking about guitar. Drums is a completely different story. I mean, you can get really lost in the weeds on that. But yeah, and I don't, I mean, and I think, you know, the music right now, there was these big progressions of differences in styles, you know, from big bands to Elvis to, you know, you see these big jumps and these, and they're all rooted in R&B. We all know that sort of thing, you know, blues and that sort of thing. But the way that they evolved it, like I know we're talking about, is music evolving? Is it regressing? To me, I don't know if it's regressing, but it's probably a little static, and it has been for a good decade. Like nothing's, it's just like not progressing.
And let me point out, music was static in the mid to late 50s. After the death of Ritchie Valens, the Big Bopper, and Buddy Holly. And a skiffle band out of Liverpool became famous in 1961. And a explosion of music happened. I do agree that that does happen. Like, music does ebb and flow. I I'm not going to dismiss it out of hand that bad music doesn't get made. Yes. And bad music does get recorded. I just think that when people talk about a music regression, I don't agree with that. I think it's maybe a music stagnation is a better way to describe it.
I would also say that some of it is also what we're willing to accept as consumers. And I think the internet played a big part in that. You think of some of these songs started out as internet hits simply because a Rebecca Black could be anybody. You know, what was that song Friday that she came out with about a dozen or so years ago? She literally could have been any girl in America singing that. And it became this huge hit because we've accepted less. There's a lot of really good musicians out there, but it's not popular music. I mean, I think of one in particular. Her name is ZZ Ward. My girlfriend and I discovered her probably about 6 or 7 years ago. She does kind of a blue-eyed soul type of thing. Incredible songwriter, incredible musicianship. She's got one song on, I think it was one of the Cars soundtracks. I don't know if it was the second or the third one. Incredible musician, incredible songwriter, amazing voice, beautiful girl. But she's fringe. And I think there's a lot of those musical acts existing on the fringe that are really, really good that nobody's hearing about because it's not this accepted cookie cutter popular music that's out right now.
Yeah, like
that's a money making business. Go ahead.
Yeah, like a band that I really like, that the only reason I really heard about them was because I was playing FIFA 22 and I heard one of the songs on there. I'm like, who the hell is this? And it is this is definitely not in my wheelhouse, but it's a band called Churches, but it's spelled C-H-V-R-C-H-E-S, right? And the lead singer is Lauren Mayberry. This girl can sing her ass off. I mean, go on YouTube and watch her cover Madonna's Like a Prayer, and you'll be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
She's killing it. So yeah, you're absolutely right. There is good music out there being made. It's maybe a little harder to find. You have to do a little bit more work to actually find it, especially if you're like, and Pat, granted, you're probably the more eclectic out of the three of us. So maybe it's easier for you, but like we're DJ and I in our wheelhouse, you actually have to search for this stuff to say, okay, who's making really good stuff nowadays? Like, sometimes I listen to Eddie Trunk. And Eddie's pretty good about pointing you in the direction of stuff that's happening nowadays that is appealing to him. And all right, my taste is kind of aligned with his. So, you know, he did stuff years ago and helped me find music that I didn't know even existed. So I would never be as into Iced Earth as I am now if I hadn't listened to Eddie Trunk years ago.
Fair enough. So two things. And then, as I mentioned before, I do have a hard out, so we're going to have to wrap this conversation up really, really quickly. First, I was not crazy. Christina Aguilera has indeed She is part of an ownership group that promotes sexual wellness. The brand is called Playground. And I'm just saying, like, as she's continued to do music, you know, and body positivity has always been a big thing with her.
Yeah.
Like, and just sexuality has been a big thing with her. Like, go back and listen to the Back to Basics album. That is a dirty, dirty album. And I love her for it. Candyman is naughty. Just naughty. Anyway, my last thought about this, and you kind of hit it, and this is where we're going to wrap it. I strongly encourage people to take risks when it comes to listening. Listen to shit that you may not expect to like, because even in genres that I don't care for, country, looking at you, I find people I like, and I find music happening and being built in a way that is unique and awesome. And a couple of years ago, if you would have told me a couple of years ago that like folk would find a resurgence, that folk music, and not just American folk music, but, you know, like Celtic and Canadian and Mexican folk music. And that's the other thing. Look at what's happening in Latin America. Bad Bunny ain't an accident. Like, he's not an accident. Find those voices and listen to what they're doing. And then listen how other artists are starting to take that music and blend it, because that's what those artists did. Like the folk metal run that we had a few years back, I'm talking decades, like Dropkick Murphys, like folk punk, like Celtic punk.
Mumford and Sons.
That's a real thing.
Look at Mumford and Sons.
Mumford and Sons. And Mumford and Sons isn't punk. That's like a rock folk band. And they just put out a new album. They just put out a new song. They are still doing great things. Great things are happening in music. And it may not be the 60s where we've got the Mamas and the Papas. But I will sum up by saying I do not agree that music has regressed. I still love it, and I encourage you. And I'm not saying that Dave and DJ, they love music too, kids. I'm not saying they don't. And I don't think that they're curmudgeons who hate all the music that kids are putting out. My encouragement to all of you, though, is to, if you find yourself in a niche, one, look up those artists and see who they say they love and influence them, because I bet you'll be surprised. I had no idea that Metallica loved Queen until Freddie died. No idea. But I love Metallica, and you wouldn't know by listening to Metallica that they love Queen. Like, you wouldn't. Yeah.
There's not a lot of
Queen. And that's just one example.
They're not like Queen in them. Like, yeah, Justice for All. I was like, really? No, but it's okay.
You know what they have, though? They have one tune that they played it at the tribute concert, Stone Cold Crazy.
Right, right. I mean, maybe that was the hint that you needed. They covered the song.
Well, and they talked about it. So that is my last plea to you. Okay, we gotta get out of here. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this impromptu edition of Musical Chairs. Dave, DJ, we're going to do a quick once around. Tell everybody where they can find you out there on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Let's start with Dave, my brother from another mother halfway across the country.
Oh, yeah. You can find me on X and where I did sell out to Elon for a variety of reasons, Pat, but that's okay. On X at Attitude Ag, at Attitude AGG. That's also on Blue Sky. Facebook.com/attitudeofaggression and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads.
DJ.
You can find me, Jason, and Rob every Saturday on the Chairshot Radio Network with the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. You can find me on the app formerly known as Twitter, where I have not yet sold out, at the Mindless Pod.
And you can follow me on the X Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. You can also find me on Blue Sky and Threads and Insta and Meta and all that stuff too. So make sure you check all of that out. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this impromptu edition of Musical Chairs. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I enjoyed having it with Dave and DJ. Guys, thank you so much for jumping in on this one late. I greatly appreciate it. And we'll see you next time when we see you, everybody, because next Tuesday, it's definitely going to be the Four Corners. Thank you for listening. This has been Musical Chairs here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
My name is Giorgio Settis. I'm the co-founder of Nutrafol.
My hair started thinning in my early 20s. I tried everything, and nothing was really working. So we created Nutrafol. our hair growth supplements undergo clinical trials and have helped millions of men and women get visibly thicker and stronger hair in just 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's NutraFol.com.